And Ms. Evans, has your firm been doing this work at the request of the court? We appreciate your efforts very much. Our third case for this morning is Marr against Bank of America, number 11-1424. Mr. Blythen.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is John Blythen. I represent the appellant, Mr. Marr. Truth in Lending Act requires that Mr. Marr receive two copies of the notice of right to cancel his loan when he signed up those papers at the closing.
May I ask you a kind of a 10,000 feet up question? It's my understanding that because it's your position that Mr. Marr, in fact, received only one copy of the notice of right to rescind, that he is, in fact, now entitled to rescind because he gets the benefit of that three-year period. But under Section 1635, you don't just rescind. Once the right to rescind notice has been received and the creditor has returned the money, the obligor, as the statute calls the person, has to give back what was received. So that means Mr. Marr would have to come up with $195,000.
Your Honor, in this case, this loan has been paid off already. The Seventh Circuit has previously ruled in the Handy case that when a loan has been paid off, and they can still rescind the loan, and in exchange for that rescission process, they get the money that is the difference between what they would have when they paid off at the full amount versus when they would have paid off at the tender amount. That's the measure of damages.
So how much is that here?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't remember off the top of my head.
Ballpark? I won't hold you to it as an admission. I just want to get some sense of what we're talking about here.
I don't have a ballpark. I didn't even consider that as a question today.
Well, the reason I raised it is simply because, you want to know if you're engaging in some useful process, and if Mr. Marr has fallen on difficult financial times, coming up with $195,000. Could be difficult, and if the value of the property has sunk, which may or may not have happened in his area, but it certainly happened in a lot of areas around this country,
If I remember correctly, I believe we're talking like in the range of $30,000 in this case. Again, Mr. Marr has paid off this loan, so he does not. They've already been tendered. They've already had everything paid back. So that's not an issue in this case. The issue in this case is, I guess, a matter of first impression as to, for the Seventh Circuit, to determine what level of evidence a plaintiff needs to rebut the presumption that he delivered, that the two notices were delivered to him.
The district court, I think there was a lot of not very helpful discussion about bursting bubbles and presumptions and the like. I think, fairly reading the district court's opinion, he finds that Mr. Marr's evidence is sufficiently unclear. It's not just crisp evidence that, I looked at all of the documents and there was only one copy of the notice. It's like, I don't really remember. I was sitting there. I just have what they gave me. The district judge doesn't think that he's put enough in the record to move forward, in other words, to even just, let's say, to get past summary judgment.
Your Honor,
so I think it would be helpful if you discuss that.
I believe that the district court, Mr. Marr testified that he took all of the papers that he received at the closing and put them in a pile. He took the pile home and placed it in a filing cabinet. That filing cabinet or that folder sat there. At some point, some documents got added to it, but no documents. Mr. Marr testified specifically that no documents ever got removed from that file until he took the whole file to his attorney's office and we determined that there was no, that there was only one document in there.
So he also has an affidavit, does he not, saying that the description of the process that the Countryside people used, or that the title company person, I guess, used, did not match his experience at the closing?
That's correct. This is his deposition testimony. Now he remembered specifically that he got one copy of each document that he had to sign at the the appendix.
But I thought he also said in response to this statement from the title company person that she did not, in fact, sit him down. I guess this is in the red brief around page 4 or 5, that she did not review the NORTC with him at the end of the closing, go through all of this explanation. And
right.
So he says, maybe that's what you usually do, but that didn't happen in my case.
Right. He says basically she rushed him through the documents. I'm not sure to what extent that matters when I guess the best evidence in this case.
I'm saying it might matter is because what you need to do, I think, is get beyond simply the flat denial, I didn't get two copies, or this envelope theory that everybody talks about. And I would say, taking things favorably to you, you're suggesting that there's more to it than that.
I'm suggesting that Mr. Marr testified that he got, you know, a set of documents at closing. I mean, it can't be the standard under TILA that you have to remember every document that you get at closing. I mean, how many of it? You said in a different case that you need a strong wrist and a good pen, I believe. No, I don't think anybody remembers every document they get at closing. That can't be the standard. But when you get a pile of documents and you say, these are all the documents I got at closing, even if there are a few extra documents that he slid in there, you know, over time, there's no evidence that he removed any documents. He specifically said that he didn't remove any documents. And, you know, we look through the packet at the attorney's office and there's only one there. I think that gets to a jury. You know, it's that evidence versus boilerplate acknowledgement on the bottom of a form that says, yes, I got this document. I mean, how many TILA cases are there in the countrywide, not just countrywide, across the country where people win, where people, the closing agents don't follow their supposed procedures, and they only get one copy, they get blank copies, they get incorrect copies. I don't think it's realistic. I want to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
You may do so. From Mr. Muth.
Good morning, Your Honors. David Muth representing Bank of America. We're fighting over $17,000.
That's interesting.
That's at least something. That's helpful to know.
That is.
We've dealt with smaller cases. So we were debating a $2.35 charge earlier today. So,
as you may have heard, I'm not sure if you're here yet.
Here's
my problem for you, Mr. Muth. We actually have a fair amount of direct testimony in this record that supports the proposition that despite the signing on that form of indicating receipt of two copies, that Mr. Marr, in fact, just got one copy, because he does say that he put everything that they gave him in this folder. He does say eventually, I mean, I know he says some contradictory things, but eventually he clarifies, you know, things were put in, but I never took anything out of the folder. And as you well know, witnesses all the time in cases, sometimes even on the stand, will testify in a contradictory way, and it's up to the jury to decide, you know, what to believe and what not to believe. So taking this record in the light most favorable to Mr. Marr, why don't we have pretty good indirect proof, namely the file to which nothing was subtracted but things were only added, that has only one copy? So somebody would just have to decide, did you really get two or did you only get one?
You have to look at the deposition in its entirety, as Judge Stattmiller did. And the answer is, if you look at page 34 and 35 of his deposition, Mr. Marr, and that's Appendix 17.
He says, I never did anything. But that's why I'm giving you the fact that he says things that are contradictory. Now, that's maybe being a little bit favorable to you. I think he explained this does not seem to be the world's most sophisticated person, so maybe he isn't explaining himself as fully. He probably just had some file called House, you know, that he stuffed things into now and then.
The answer is, again, looking at the deposition testimony and the record that was before the court, Mr. Marr acknowledges he has no idea the number of copies. He, at page 34 and 35 of his deposition, he did not note the number of any of the documents he received at his loan closing.
Of course, but you see, what I think he says is something that's a substitute for that, because having sat through a few real estate closings myself, what he does say is everything got put in a pile by the closing agent for me. The closing agent took 100% of the contents of that, put it in this folder, and nothing was removed from the folder. So rather than memorizing every document, if you say all, you've encompassed. And then no one seems to be challenging the integrity of the search at the attorney's office.
We're challenging the assertion from Mr. Marr. There's two pages of the deposition that need to be referred to. Mr. Marr states that he had no idea he only received one copy until he went to his lawyer's office
right.
2 years after the closing, the integrity of this envelope theory. The problem is, at page 34 of his deposition, he also states unequivocally that he never touched the loan folder from loan closing till the duration.
Right, and I'm saying he then at a later time says, well, things were added, but I never took anything out. So what does he mean by I never touched it? He certainly could be meaning that he never reviewed those documents, that he never removed anything from it. Adding a few utility bills or whatever these other things were could be consistent with, quote, never touching it.
The response to that would be if the court held that the envelope theory or a post hoc denial without anything else.
Well, but he has also his recollection that the agent didn't sit down and explain to him the notice of right to rescind.
That's correct, and I'll go back to the truth in lending statutory scheme. Typically a borrower, the intent of this statute and this provision for rescission, 3-day cooling off period. A borrower can take time, reflect, did I do something terrible? If so, within 3 days, they can rescind no cost, no harm, no foul. They can rescind for any reason they want whatsoever.
And Mr. Muth, if that's where the statute ended, we clearly wouldn't be here. But
agreed.
Congress, in its infinite wisdom, adds also this 3-year outer window if the right documents aren't there. And frankly, I guess the 2-document rule is in the regulations because it's not in the statute.
Yeah, that's correct. Regulation Z.
Yeah, it's in Reg Z. So for whatever reason, you know, this 2 copies of the right to rescind rule is in there, and TILA is a strict liability statute.
I agree, Your Honor, but TILA also provides it. Section 1635C, this rebuttable presumption. And the purpose of the rebuttable presumption is the last page of our appendix is the actual notice of right to cancel document signed by Mr.
Marr. Yeah,
a lot of the cases relied upon by Mr. Marr to argue that the rebuttable presumption has been overcome. The three in particular he relies on the most. Number one is the Briggs case. In that case, we don't have a situation where the borrower simply says, I don't think I received a copy of it and I have a pristine envelope. That was
a
fraud.
You don't want to try to distinguish based on 1 versus 2 or 0, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay. Let me ask you, Mr. Booth, about a month ago, the Third Circuit decided the Cappuccio case, which reversed a jury verdict for a defendant, where the trial judge had instructed the jury that something more than the borrower's testimony is needed to rebut the presumption of receipt. Could we agree with your position and affirm the district court here without disagreeing with the Third Circuit?
I'm not familiar with that decision. I am familiar with the unpublished decision from the Sixth Circuit, the Sibby case, where they held in that unpublished decision something more is, in fact, required.
Well, that's not precedential, and we now have a month ago the Third Circuit with a precedential decision saying it's reversible error to require something more than the borrower's testimony.
The the question I would have, Your Honor, is, and I'd be happy to submit a two-page brief after, is what were the facts asserted by that borrower to try to overcome the presumption? And let me explain what I mean by that.
The problem was the jury instruction.
Correct. Federal Rule of Evidence 301 is the statute that controls presumptions. In this case,
I don't think you're getting Judge Hamilton's point.
Go ahead.
Well, as you well know, somebody's testimony that something either happened or didn't happen, that he did something or didn't do something, is perfectly competent evidence. We don't have the old common law rules that people can't testify in their own behalf. And so in the Third Circuit situation, it's simply stating, yeah, that's good evidence. That's enough to get beyond this presumption. Let the chips fall where they may after that.
Correct. And the point I was trying to make as to Rule 301 is when a presumption, there's a basic fact. And in this case, TILA controls what the basic fact is that triggers the presumption. It's the signed notice of right to cancel, acknowledging that he received two copies. There's no dispute in this case. Mr. Maher, in fact, signed that document. So under TILA, the rebuttable presumption
has
been triggered.
Now Mr. Maher testifies, I didn't get two copies. And how do you reconcile that with the Third Circuit? So isn't that enough to take the presumption off the table and let's just decide, let a trier of fact decide how many copies he got?
The question becomes, what is the basis for Mr. Maher testifying that he only received one copy? And the answer isn't that he recalls only receiving one copy or that he didn't receive any documents.
That just go to the weight of his evidence. He has circumstantial evidence that he received only two copies because he remembers that every single thing they gave him went into that file. We have to accept that. He remembers that he never took anything out of that file. We have to accept that at this stage. I mean, a jury wouldn't have to accept that, but at this stage we do. So why isn't that good evidence?
It's not good evidence because it's inconsistent with his former testimony that he never touched the folder.
Wait. I mean, a jury could decide.
Witnesses contradict themselves all the time. You're asked a more specific question. You know that.
I agree. But in this case, we also have triggered and have, in effect, a presumption.
Not anymore if he's rebutted it.
then once again, relying on the fact that Congress gave a rebuttable presumption, and if a borrower can simply assert, I didn't receive the copies, thereby triggering a jury right, you really have no rebuttable presumption.
Well, we know that the statute says that your form does no more than create the presumption, which suggests it's not worth a whole lot. And it may not be if we follow the Third Circuit here.
On that point, I would submit to the fact that a number of courts have ruled that a borrower needs to provide more, and the very cases relied upon by the borrower in this case show a trending of something more than a borrower just simply saying, no, I didn't get it, to overcome that.
But these may not – what I think I will do is allow both sides within 10 days to – actually, I won't say 10 days. I'll say 2 weeks from today, given our new time convention, to file a brief. It can be in the form of a letter discussing the Third Circuit's case and any other cases that you think you want to bring to our attention. But I would remind you that the Third Circuit's case is precedential, and you're going to want to be careful with district court and non-precedential.
For those who are interested, it's spelled C-A-P-P. UCCIO against Prime Capital Funding, decided August 16th. The Westlaw site is 2011, WL 3584323.
Thank you.
Certainly. Anything further, Mr. Bliffen?
Yeah, I must admit that I haven't seen that Third Circuit case either. thanks for...
This order applies to both of you, so...
As you correctly pointed out, whether the issue of whether Mr. Maher, never touched or if there's an inconsistency there, it's a matter for the jury. It's not appropriate on summary judgment. it certainly is a question of his credibility, and the jury could rule either way on that case. We understand that. I take issue with the idea that there's nothing more than plaintiff's own, you know, bald denial of receipt. We have his packet of loan paperwork, and there's only one paper in it, in addition to his deposition testimony. Right. Mr. Muth mentioned the Sibby case, as you said, as Judge Hamilton said, it's non-presidential. And in that case, the plaintiffs failed to respond to discovery requests, I believe, including motions or requests for admissions. I don't think that bad case makes bad law should apply, or I think that maxim should apply to that case. Did you have any other questions for me? Otherwise,
no.
No.
The judges. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will receive your letters in 14 days, and the case will be taken under advisement.